All right, hello and welcome back to another episode of Just a Girl from Cleveland. This is episode 147. The NFL draft is officially complete as of this past weekend. It was a little bit anticlimactic, I will say. I feel like it was, you know, it was a good class, at least a very top-heavy class in terms of the prospects in the earlier rounds. But I don't feel like anything too crazy or exciting happened other than a couple of small things that I want to get into in terms of what other teams have done. And I also just feel like these last few years of the draft have been a little bit boring as a Browns fan, just because we haven't had first round picks. This is, you know, as everyone has been saying, officially the last year where the Browns have had to give up their first round pick for the Deshaun Watson trade. So that trade is now technically complete, which is a little bit of a bummer to realize, because obviously, you know, considering how many assets you gave up for Deshaun Watson and the amount of money that you have paid him as an organization, it kind of sucks to see the production and the number of games played so far in that contract. Obviously, there's still more time on the contract, but you would just hope to have, you know, had a little bit more success with him given the number of assets that you gave up to get him. So happy that that is at least over and the team can start getting their first round picks back in 2025. We'll make the draft a little bit more exciting for everyone. I mean, this year was just, it wasn't until pick 54 that they had their first pick in the second round even. So late second round was the first pick. So just makes it a little bit less exciting. The draft used to be our Super Bowl back in the day. When I was growing up, it was everything you looked forward to, which quarterback we were going to take with the first pick in the draft, you know, that particular year. It was just, it was always someone different. Yeah, we're going to get into a couple of other things before we get into the draft. I wanted to quickly touch on the Cavs because I totally jinxed them last episode. I was like, oh, maybe they'll go for the sweep. Up 2-0, they're looking good. Magic don't really look like they have an answer. You know, they don't have a comparable superstar to Donovan Mitchell. It's just not going to happen. And then, of course, the team goes back and plays those two games in Orlando and loses both of them. As of now of recording this, they are up in the series 3-2. Obviously, the Cavs won game five without Jared Allen, which was pretty good to see because he has been really the only stable player that they have had in this series. So the fact that, you know, in general, they were able to get it done without Jared, I think, was a big deal. Obviously have to go back to Orlando for game six. Hopefully they can close out in Orlando, because a game seven, anything can happen. All cards are on the table at that point. So really hoping that they don't have to go there, but I really shouldn't have spoken too soon. I should have known better just with how the team has played this season, that there have been those high highs and then they can just completely fall flat, which is what happened. So we shall see how the series ends. Even beyond that, though, I don't have confidence in them to go on to a series in the second round and be able to get it done against Boston. Like, that is just not realistic in my mind. So, you know, I'd love for them to get there, because I think it's always good to just have that experience anyways, to be battle tested in the playoffs in those ways, but just don't have a lot of confidence at that point. Okay, so other Browns news not draft related is that the Browns actually just picked up Greg Newsom's fifth year option. I think, you know, everyone felt like either this offseason the fifth year option was going to get picked up or Greg Newsom was going to get traded somewhere. Obviously, the trade did not end up happening. You know, I think it was pretty clear that they were taking calls and they were having conversations with other teams. There were too many reports out there from too many different sources for it not to be actually happening. And I just think it makes logical sense that they would have been fielding calls about Greg Newsom. Like, everyone knows how much corner talent that this Browns team has, that Greg Newsom has kind of been the odd man out in a lot of ways, was moved to the slot because he just hasn't had the talent to stand up on the outside in comparison to Denzel and Martin Emerson, who are much more true outside corners. But even at that, you know, I think Greg still did a decent job in the slot. I think he just, has struggled with a couple things. I think he struggles with tackling. He's a little bit undersized, and I feel like there were a couple standout games this season where he really struggled to just bring guys down, even when he was, you know, fully wrapping around them, just could not get guys to come down. And I think part of that, like I said, is just his size. And that was, I think, a big issue that showed up in a couple games. I think notably there was, I remember the Colts game specifically being there and being a little frustrated with Greg there. And then obviously, I think the wild card game, it wasn't just Greg who struggled. It was just about everyone, but he certainly struggled there. A few other games as well, but I think there's still obviously a ton of upside there. And that's why the Browns didn't just make any move to move on from him. I think they would want a really decent offer because he's still a really good player and can bring a lot of value to this team in 2024. Like, I don't think for one second that they were like, oh, Greg Newsom, you know, sucks as a corner and we have no use for him. I think it was more so just looking towards the future. And if you can get a really good return, you make that move now, knowing that Greg probably wants to be an outside corner somewhere. And when he tests free agency, is probably going to want to sign somewhere that's going to pay him big money to do that. And that's probably not going to be in Cleveland, just based on the other guys that they have. So I just think it would have made sense for both sides if they made that move. But you know, obviously a good enough offer was not presented, and the Browns are a smart organization that doesn't just jump at things and make rash decisions. They are always waiting to make the smartest decision possible. So Greg gets $13.3 million, good chunk of money for him there for his fifth year option. I think there's some extra money in there for, I believe, like games played, like playing time in general. I don't know if it's snaps taken or how they actually formulate that number, but that's some of the additional money that's in there that puts it up to $13.3 million. So yeah, that was, I think, really the only other piece of big news. We've heard a little bit here and there from Andrew Berry in the media. He has mentioned about, you know, Chubb's progress still, you know, moving along. Obviously, he still has a long way to go, such a major injury, but moving along there. And, you know, he's spoken about the draft picks that the Browns made, which I'm going to get into. So always good to hear from Andrew Berry. I also saw a hilarious clip this morning. He was on 92.3, and they asked him about the Andrew Berry red laser eye meme that everyone uses. And asked him if he had ever seen it before. He said he has. People, even within the organization, will send it to him all the time, which I thought was really funny. And I don't think he quite understood what it meant. Like, it really means, obviously, like Andrew Berry mastermind, like controlling everything. And I don't think he quite got that until they explained it to him. So I hope he realizes now it's a very flattering compliment. We're just saying, like, Andrew Berry, you're the best. You're super smart. So yeah, I thought that was really funny that they asked him about that. Okay, so let's get into the draft now. We'll start with kind of things outside of the Browns before I get into all of the Browns picks. So I think the big one, obviously, that was so shocking to everyone was Michael Penix going at 8 to the Falcons. I don't think anyone saw the Falcons taking a quarterback that early after they just, a few short months ago, really not that long ago at this point, made the decision to sign Kirk Cousins to a lot of money, considering he's coming off of a major injury. So it was pretty clear that they were buying into Kirk Cousins, and that was their plan. I thought maybe they would take like a later round quarterback, but I did not see them using pick 8 to take Michael Penix way earlier than every single person who has done a mock draft or has looked at players in general has had him. Nobody had him that high. So it was a pretty wild move for the Falcons to do that. And, you know, with some time separated from it now, I felt like maybe I would hear something within the media or people that that cover it that made sense to me on why that the Falcons made this choice. And basically their thought process was like, we're never going to be this high in the draft again to be able to make a pick for a quarterback at this point, because they intend on being much better next season with Kirk Cousins as their quarterback. So they're saying, hey, if we have a pick that's pick eight, pretty decently high pick in the draft, we really like this guy, we should take him now, because we don't know if we'll ever have an opportunity to take another quarterback at this point in a draft. And look, if that's how they evaluated Michael Penix, fine, you're like the only team that has. And I think history shows that, you know, there's usually not like outliers where you're the only team that evaluated this guy correctly and everyone else was wrong. That doesn't happen very often. So I would be shocked if they were like so correct about him being so high up on their draft board and that everyone else was wrong. But yeah, I just I get the thought process of wanting to take a player at a very important position when you have the draft stock for it, but I just don't see, I guess, what they are seeing in Michael Penix as an NFL prospect and as the guy of the future for them. You know, he could prove everyone wrong, but it was a pretty wild move to make that I think has still not been justified yet at this point in time. I think something else that was interesting in the draft was the Bills trading their draft pick at the end of the first round with the Chiefs so that the Chiefs could jump up and take Xavier Worthy. Worthy, fastest player in the draft. I think a lot of people were just, when you have a speed guy like that, everyone says Tyreek Hill. So automatically you think, oh, great fit on the Chiefs. Patrick Mahomes would love that. Obviously the Chiefs need a wide receiver. So it made a ton of sense for him to go there. And look, I don't know if the Bills, I'm pretty sure the Bills probably were not going to take Worthy. I don't think they would have made that move if they also wanted Worthy. So I definitely, I don't think that was the case. What I do think is crazy though, and is just bad business, is trading at that point with the team that has just stomped on you year after year and game after game and just ruined your life as an organization. I just don't think that you should be doing business with them like that and putting them in a better position in the draft to take the player that they want. I think you tell them, sorry, call someone else, find another way. I really thought that was crazy. Especially considering, like, I remember when all the Stefon Diggs stuff was happening, word was that the Bills were saying, you can go anywhere, but we're not letting you go to the Chiefs. Like, we're not making a trade happen to the Chiefs. And I thought that made a lot of sense. Like, yeah, you don't want him to go to the team that you are really rivals with in this league right now and that have consistently beat you in these horrific and tough ways year after year. I just thought that made absolutely no sense. And I just, yeah, I just think it's bad business. So that was one that kind of stumped me, even though I don't think that that's the player that the Bills wanted at the end of the day. Other than that, like, most things went as expected. Like, the quarterbacks went in the order a lot of people expected, at least in terms of the top three. Like, that was as everyone pretty much mocked up and thought was going to happen. You know, Marvin Harrison Jr. going to Arizona. You know, maybe there was like a little bit mixing up of the receivers throughout that first round. There were quite a few of them, obviously, that went. But in general, I just don't think anything too crazy happened. So let's get into the Browns draft picks now. So in general, I feel just okay about what the Browns did in the draft. I think, you know, like I mentioned, not having a first round pick, it's hard to get too excited because these are not prospects that you look at and say immediately, that guy's going to be a Hall of Famer for us. Like, that's not someone you are getting so excited about to the point that you're thinking, you know, this could be someone that's signing 2-3 contracts with this team and is going to be a long-term staple at the position and we don't have to worry about this position anymore. That's not the guys that the Browns took in this draft. And that's okay. That's just kind of the cards they were dealt. So I try not to be too harsh with it. I would say I would probably, if I were to rate their draft, it would be somewhere around like a C, B minus, like nothing too exciting, just pretty average overall. You know, I think the thing most people were curious to see was what positions the Browns ended up using their especially their second and third round pick for. Just because there's not like super glaring positions of need at this point in time, but there are certainly holes that need to be filled here and there in terms of depth pieces, and also just constantly looking towards the future. Who's getting older? Whose contracts are ending? They're always looking at those things. And I think that's the position the Browns are in more so than filling any immediate needs of guys that you need to be able to play right now, which is a pretty good place to be, a comfortable place to be overall. I think most people were probably most surprised with them taking, with their second pick at pick 85 in the third round, taking a guard. I would say this was the most controversial to a lot of people, just because I think the Browns have such a reputation of stability at offensive line, and they have had that reputation for many years now. But, you know, Father Time creeps up and takes everyone down at some point. And look, they've had plenty of injuries in the last year on the offensive line, in the last couple of years, really. Bitonio is getting older, as sad as that is, and as a staple he has been of this organization, he is getting older, so you do have to start thinking about the future there. Teller's contract is up, I believe, in 2025, so you don't have much time left with him, and I just don't know if they're going to be signing him to another deal. And, you know, on the rest of the offensive line, I think there's obviously still been questions at tackle. So I wouldn't have been surprised to see them go either guard or tackle with any of these earlier second or third round picks, just because I do think it's such an important part of the Browns' identity. And it would make sense for them to want to start thinking about the future and planning for that. And just always looking for depth in those areas. The draft is the best way to do it for offensive line. It always is going to be. It's going to be much harder to use free agency or trades to get that done. Draft is going to be the way to go. So yeah, I think that was the one big thing that I would say shocked most people. I think people were either really excited or really not excited about the second round pick at pick 54 taking Mike Hall, defensive tackle, Ohio State. Obviously, as a Buckeye, I was thrilled to be taking a Buckeye. Felt like for many years, the Browns just refused to draft Buckeyes. Like, it was some weird vendetta they had where they were like, we can't take any of them, even though they have spent 4 years 2 hours away and would be comfortable being in Ohio, but we can't take any of them. And they've started to, in the last couple years, I feel like, show Ohio State a little bit more love, which has been nice. So Mike Hall is an interesting player. He didn't always, in terms of just, I feel like his time at Ohio State, he just didn't always stay on the field a lot. He's not a guy that was playing every single snap in every single game. That's not the type of player he was. And I think that's the one quality that has brought a lot of questions for people, is the concern that he's not going to be the type of player a lot of teams want on their defensive line in the NFL. A lot of teams are looking for a guy to play every single snap. And, you know, I think maybe right now the Browns are looking for more someone that they can plug in to the offensive line right now, here and there, and continue to develop for the future. And that's kind of what they went with here. He has those really high-end explosive qualities of being able to get after the quarterback that makes him a really exciting player. And I think I can envision some really exciting moments happening for him with getting after the quarterback. But obviously, there's those other questions. Another great thing, I think, is that he is from the area. Streetsboro is where he went to high school. So local guy, I think that is always just exciting for people in the area, just as fans, to have a local guy. But yeah, I think, look, when you look at our defensive tackles that we have right now, I was kind of pulling up the depth chart earlier today when I was preparing for this. And, you know, we've plugged in some pieces, especially last offseason, but I don't think any part of it was all that exciting. And there were quite a few injuries within this group as well. So Dalvin Tomlinson, I think, was the most stable out of all of the guys in this group, and you feel pretty good about him. Beyond that, you have Shelby Harris, Siaki Ika, Maurice Hurst, who all had moments. There were some injuries within that group as well, but I don't think there was any one of those three that I think shined so brightly last season that you feel super confident about the future. So I think it's okay to want to have brought in another guy in that group to just give you some security with health, and also someone to just see, like, hey, can we get a spark within this group when other things aren't working and other guys aren't having a great day? So I liked the pick overall. I didn't hate it as much as some people who have those concerns about his ability to, you know, stay on the field and be out there consistently. Then, like I mentioned, round three, pick 85, took a guard. It was Zach Zinner from Michigan. So as I am saying that, I was so happy they took a Buckeye. Of course, they have to go take a Michigan Wolverine right after it. But at least the Buckeye was taken first, so I can find solace in the fact that, you know, we're always a step ahead. I can't even say that anymore because, you know, obviously it's been a couple years now that Michigan has been winning that game. But there was so many, many years where I got to just stomp on their grave constantly, and now it's hard to do. So God, Ohio State, please win this year, please. I need to be able to trash talk again. But anyways, they took Zach Zinner, guard, and he is kind of the opposite of Mike Hall in the way that he was on the field consistently, and, you know, played four seasons at Michigan at right guard. He did actually miss the final three games of this past season, funny enough, because of his injury in the Ohio State Michigan game, when none other than Mike Hall was blocked into him, and he was blocked into his leg, and it caused that injury, which it's just really ironic that they're teammates now. I know when the team posts those phone calls that you know, Andrew Berry, Kevin Stefanski, some of the other coaches, they'll call the players after they're drafted and just talk to them for a couple moments. I know that was mentioned to Zach when he called, of like, hey, are you gonna be good to play with the buddy who injured you? But I'm sure, you know, it's obviously it was accidental, that was not on purpose, and they'll be able to be teammates together in the future. But it's just ironic and kind of funny that those are the circumstances of those two players being picked in the same city. But yeah, I already explained how I feel okay about taking a guard there. So, you know, nothing too crazy. Now we have round 5, 6, and 7. And those picks, look, we can analyze them all we want and discuss how we feel about them. But at the end of the day, these are just shots in the dark. You really, at this point, I think with where the Browns roster is at, you're not even sure if these guys are going to be able to make the 53-man roster. You know, if anything, they'll probably be on the practice squad, just in terms of how much roster depth that this team has at this point in time. So I need everyone to not get too bothered about the picks that are being taken at this point in time. Like, it's nothing too crazy, especially when you get to the 6th, 7th round. I would say that there's so much less depth in the draft these days because of NIL. A lot of guys are just choosing to stay in college longer, and you're just not seeing the lower end of the draft be filled with as much talent. We're definitely, I think, starting to see the effects of that. So I don't think it's too crazy to just be like, okay, these are interesting picks, and we don't need to get all concerned that they didn't take a certain position I think they needed to address. Like, this is not the way that they're going to do it by taking a 7th rounder. But at pick 156, round 5, they did take receiver. I think everyone thought they'd probably address receiver again at some point just to take a shot and see. Jamari Thrash from Louisville. He's, you know, a versatile guy, has played outside in slot, good route runner. He really shined in the Senior Bowl, and I think we've actually consistently seen Andrew Berry like guys who play really well in the Senior Bowl. It really seems like the Browns organization is paying attention there. So I think that's probably where he kind of moved up on their list at that point in time. This front office in general has not had a great history of drafting wide receivers, so I don't have a ton of confidence in this, especially at pick 156. You know, when this organization has really, in the last couple of years, only drafted kind of in that third, fourth, fifth round range when taking receivers, and just really hasn't been hitting and finding a lot of success. So I'm not going to get my hopes up too much, but I think it was good for them to address the position in general. And then the last three picks, I don't have a ton of thoughts on. They took at pick 206, Nathaniel Watson; pick 227, Miles Harden, corner from South Dakota; and I didn't say Nathaniel Watson, linebacker, Mississippi State. And then pick 243, their last pick, Juwan Briggs, defensive tackle, Cincinnati, another Ohio College coming on in. And then they took a number of undrafted free agents, and I think my biggest takeaways from this, I'm obviously not going to go through each of the players there, but they did take three more offensive linemen. So you had two interior offensive linemen in Javian Cohen and Jalen Sundell. I don't know if I said that correctly. And then offensive tackle Lorenzo Thompson. So I thought that was interesting that they're continuing to get depth at the position to just take more shots there and see if they can have some depth. I think they have like PTSD in general from last year, when there was so many injuries on the offensive line that they were just constantly trying to figure out how to rearrange everyone and plug different guys in, that they want to be prepared on, you know, not just who they're going to hopefully have on the 53-man roster, but who they're going to have on the practice squad to have ready to step up if needed. They also addressed running back with an undrafted free agent, Aiden Robbins, BYU. Unlikely to have any effect on the current roster, but I think a lot of people thought they might, you know, try to bring a running back in at some point. So that is where they did it. Okay, so I think that's all I have for you guys. Not too many other thoughts. Because, like I said, if we had a first-round pick, I could spend a whole show probably talking about them. But, you know, they're doing the best they can with the resources that they have. Next year, we'll be back with first-round picks. For coming up on this podcast, I believe that the schedule release should be happening next week. As you all know, that's like Christmas for me. I get so excited for the schedule release. I'm analyzing the schedule, planning trips in my head of where I'm going to be going, just getting pumped for it overall. So I believe it's always like second week of May. So I'm assuming it's going to happen sometime next week. It could be the following week. They haven't announced the date yet, so we'll see when it happens. But looking forward to that either way, and we'll talk about that when it happens. But that is all I have for you guys. Thank you so much for listening. If you could, please leave a review or rating. I would appreciate that. Follow and subscribe. Subscribe on the YouTube. Leave a comment on the YouTube how you feel about the Browns draft overall, especially those first two picks in rounds two and three. Definitely let me know your thoughts. And I will catch you guys on the next one. As always, go Browns.